coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Race the Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friday edition of Racing Across America. Happy to be here from our clear court set. I said earlier on the handicapping show, yet another gorgeous day here at Sarah. And it really is a gorgeous day. I mean, this is the perfect morning. Earlier in the meet, we were having really nice summer days, but there was a level of humidity. But today, it's, as I said earlier, the word people like to use, crisp. And as it's getting to 10 o'clock now, it's becoming more out of the crisp area and more into the comfortable area. But sunny and really, again, a nice August morning here at Saratoga. And it'll be a nice morning as we continue with the show. A little bit later on, one of our Gary Contessa interviews. He's going to interview Andy Serling, so you don't want to stay tuned for that towards the end of the program. Should be a lot of fun. Prior to that, we'll have our friend Ellis Starr on via Zoom. I wanted to bring Ellis in, the National Racing Analyst for Equibase. His featured race of the week this week is the Pacific Classic. So I wanted to at least talk a little bit about the Pacific Classic on this Friday edition before that went off tomorrow, because obviously the card available, the Del Mar card available here at Capital OTB. And it's a great stakes card as well. So we'll talk with Ellis about Pacific Classic, some of the Del Mar stakes. We'll also get his ideas on the four-star day tomorrow here at Saratoga. But I'm going to start things out. It is always fun on the program to talk to people who I knew before I was really in the racing game, and they were in the racing game. Last year I had Sean Smealy on, the now down in Washington, D.C., is the director of the Coalition for Horse Racing Safety. I've known him since we were both little kids, but I've known my next guest not that long, but again, before we were both in the game. And when he was in the winner's circle the other day, I put him on the guest list. Tim McCoy of Blue Streak Racing. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Always good to see you.
Yeah, you as well. And as I say, it was only a couple of weeks ago I saw you over on the front side with a winner, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But before we get into that, talk a little bit about how you got into the game, became a fan of the game. Was it just being a Saratoga native, it was a natural?
It was, but at the same time, it was a circuitous route. I grew up in Saratoga, going to the races, working at the track for many years. I did everything from hand out uniforms to work security to sling hot dogs. And so I'd always seen the front side of the track and all the rich and famous people and that wall around the paddock where all the horses were, and never ever thought that I'd be inside the paddock, let alone have a horse of my own. So from there, it was, I tell people about 7-8 years ago, I found myself with a little disposable income, and now I don't have that problem anymore. I decided to get a little piece of a horse, like most people do, through a syndicate. It was a good experience, but you know what? It left me wanting more. I got to stand in the winner's circle, and it was fun, but I only had that little piece of the horse, and I just wanted more. So I ran into Mike Piazza, who owns Zilla Racing Stables. We met about 5 years ago. Come to find out, we had both had a piece of a horse in the same syndicate. We both kind of had the same experience and felt like we could do more. Mike's done a fantastic job with Zilla. He explained what he was trying to do. I was on board, so I got a couple horses with Mike. We actually, I still have a couple pieces of horses with Mike and Zilla. We actually won yesterday out of trouble in the third race. So that was nice. Exciting too. And from there, again, it looked like, you know, I just wanted a little bit more. I wanted to call the shots. So Mike was gracious enough to let me acquire one of his horses about 4 years ago that wasn't quite New York caliber, Vicerian. I sent her to Trez Abbott in Fairhill. We ran her in Delaware and Parks and Penn National. Got a couple wins with her, you know, and so I was off and on on my own. And from there, I, you know, through Mike, I started going to the sales. I met my bloodstock agents. From there, I met other people in the game, and I've developed a really good team. I've made all of the little mistakes that you can make in this business, but my team, they prevent me from making the big mistakes. And I know what I bring to the table, which is not much, and they, I know what to leave to the experts. And, you know, it's been fantastic to have a winner at Saratoga last year. To do it again this year is just something that I'd never imagined in my wildest dreams. And it's been a great ride, and we've got a horse that might have a little ability, so we're just going to see where it takes us.
And we'll hit on that in a moment. We've got the replay and whatnot, so we'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to talk a little bit also just about ownership in general, because I've had a number of trainers in here and racing organization people. But as an owner, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the quarantine period, because I think the owners kind of took the brunt of it. You're still have to pay for feed and whatnot, but there was no place to race horses. So what was that kind of two-month quarantine period like for an owner?
It was a little difficult. Before this had begun, probably like December, January, February, I had just opened up a second front, so to speak. I started claiming horses with Jack Hurley at Charlestown, because the whole goal in this game is to you know, be viable, have starts, show that you're a going concern, because it's hard to get people to give you money.
Sure.
You know, if you don't have a track record. So I've been trying to get a track record, and luckily Charlestown was one of the last to shut down. So we were racing down there, albeit without fans, straight through into about April. When New York shut down, luckily at that point, it didn't affect me personally that much. My now two-year-old was still down in Florida in Ocala and learning how to be a racehorse. So, you know, it didn't really affect me that much, but I could see how if you owned a horse and you wanted to see it in the mornings and you couldn't go, that would be a problem. And especially for someone who runs a syndicate, you have partners, the whole part of the selling point is that you can get the backstretch experience. And if you can't provide that and there's no racing to go to, there's not a lot for you to sell.
That's true, and a lot, you know, when I have the partnership people come in and talk about that, a lot of it, and that's really, at Saratoga, that's really the selling point. Come on, say, get in the paddock and get, you know, come to the backstretch and whatnot. So talk a little bit about that as being a syndicate selling point that you just haven't had this year.
That's true. I, like a lot of other syndicate people and trainers, they basically circle July and August on their calendar and work backwards. So for me, I always want to have a horse running at Saratoga. Not only is it my hometown, but the purses are fantastic. You get friends and family, and it also generates interest that
sure.
you're running there.
Yeah.
It's the best meet in the country, and it's the best horses, so this is where you want to be. So if I don't have a two-year-old or a three-year-old in the pipeline, I'll start looking at claiming a horse like around April, May, try to get a start into them and have them prepped and ready to go for Saratoga. It's what we all target, especially the people who are from here. This is where we want to be.
Yeah, and I from years past, the groups that get here and you walk in the paddock, win or lose, smiles on their faces, but a win is even better. And before I was going to lead right into the replay, but before I do that, let me just add, I mean, I guess it's obvious, but stable name?
Blue Streak Racing is, the Blue Streaks are the Saratoga Blue Streaks. Being a Saratoga guy, I wanted to have something that...
And I love the silks.
Yeah, thanks. I designed those, and I just thought it captured Saratoga.
Yeah, yeah.
And as someone trying to syndicate horses, having that Saratoga connection and being geared up to run at Saratoga every year, it's a selling point,
yeah.
You know, frankly.
Yeah, again, love the silks. Yeah. For folks who aren't familiar, Blue Streak's the name of the high school team and whatnot, so it is a great tie-in. So let's go back. A couple weeks ago, I saw you before the race, and we were talking, and I saw you after the race as well. Plenty of big smiles, you and trainer Ray Handel. Rosa Veloce, is it Veloce or Veloce?
Veloce.
Veloce. Rosa Veloce. We'll watch the stretch run here. Again, this is August 5th, fifth race of the day. First time starter, and that makes it all much better. She's the nine horse in here. First time starter by Girolamo. I always butcher that name. Regardless, gets it done here under the Blue Streak Silks. And as I say, went up at Saratoga, very special. But boy, when you can win with a first time starter, talk a little bit about the horse and the performance.
Well, I got a call from Ray, who I've had horses with in the past and have claimed with. And he called me right after the October Fasig Tipton sale. And he said he bought a horse with me in mind. I'm like, okay. I know he shops for horses with Oracle Bloodstock, Jim Hatchett, and Connor Foley, who were my guys. So I knew it was a good horse. He told me the price, $12,000. And I'm like, okay. So you think of me when you think of inexpensive horses. I'm like, which is fine. I immediately said, of course, I'd love to take the horse. And what made it even better was Ray said he wanted to stay in for a piece. As an owner, you always like the confidence of having the trainer wanting to stay in. We sent the horse to Raul Reyes at King's Equine in Ocala, and she spent the winter there learning how to be a horse. She, you know, wasn't outstanding in any way. She went about her business, but she kept a lot of good company down in Ocala. Raul does a lot of the spendthrift horses, Beholders, two-year-old colt, QB1 was down there. Ray had his two-year-olds down there. She trained with Irish Constitution, who was a first out winner here. A few others, Danny Gargan's To Run Happy, two-year-olds were down there at the same time, so she kept really good company. It wasn't until, you know, about late April, early May, when she went up to Belmont, that Ray got her, and she kind of came into her own. She started throwing some fast times out on the work tab.
Well, it worked out on July 13th. That's always nice for a two-year-old.
Yeah, it was totally unexpected. She's been above and beyond all our expectations, and we thought she would run well in that race, but to come back with a 77 buyer was that kind of blew us out of the water. And I just checked this morning on DRF, and the 77 buyer is still in the tops in the country for two-year-olds so far.
And went off as the second choice there, so took a little action too. Jose Ortiz jumps on board, and that was a great. And I had pulled up the auction page from that Fasig auction, and a lot of nice black. First fall for the dam, but a lot of nice black type down the page, and she lived up to it in the career debut. So, what's the game plan now for her?
Well, for about 2 seconds, we were considering the spin away, we're gonna go The two-year-old scene has just gotten so crazy. Steve Asmussen has got his bunch. The waters are deep, but we're going to jump in the stakes.
Yeah, Cantata the other morning
was amazing. Yeah, that's a filly you want to avoid at all costs. But we're going to go stakes company. The New York bred Seeking the Anti-Stakes is the day before the Derby card here, and so we're going to give that a shot. We're going to run into probably the horse that came in second in our race, Summer Brew, who will probably run better second time out, but we're hoping we're going to run better second time out as well.
Nice. We'll be rooting for you, certainly. Get a stakes win up in Saratoga, even better.
Crazy, yes.
Yeah. And just before we let you go, I was visiting the website, and I wanted to go back. You've already mentioned her. Vicerian?
Vicerian, yes.
Vicerian. I pulled up the win, which, according to the website, was your first win as a stable. We're going back to January 2018 down at the Parks. Vicerian will be the number 8 horse here getting it done. I think afterwards we have a little win picture as well there. Talk a little bit about what it's like to get your first win as a partnership.
Yeah, that was crazy. The thing with Vicerian is that we got 2 wins out of her, one on turf and one on dirt. Her story is a long and complicated one, but the bottom line is I still have her to this day. She is a mom out at Irish Hill Farm here in Saratoga. She has a foal, a 3-month-old foal now by Weekend Hideaway, freshman sire, and we bred her back to that. So I'm
and we I pulled up some pics from the website because they were cute. So I had to pull them up.
Yep, there's Snips. She is doing well out at Irish Hill right now, and so I'm taking a stab at
the homebred. I like that.
The homebred. maybe in a couple years we'll see her out. She is a New York bred, obviously New York sired. So maybe we'll see her out here in a couple years.
That would be wild. Yes. To have a homebred from Tim McCoy.
Amazing.
With the win the other day, Rosa Veloce, and maybe a stakes coming up as well. Tim, I had to, as I say, get you in when I saw you in the winner's circle the other day. We flashed up the website. The guys out in the studio can flash that up again. If folks are interested, and I always talk about it when I have partnership people here, certainly this year, we're maybe even with the situation with less sports being available and more people watching horse racing, maybe more and more people are kind of thinking, I'd like to maybe think about getting in the game. So I always tell people there are different levels and different kind of partnerships. But if people visit the website, they can learn more about Blue Streak Racing. But also there's a contact link. So if folks are interested, they can get in touch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm a small guy. I don't have a ton of horses, but like I said earlier, I'm always aiming for Saratoga. This is where you want to be, and for local people to be involved just makes it all the better.
Very good, Tim. Appreciate the visit. And I should say, we met years ago, and if I tell our friends out Desperate needs to watch the replay, we should toss in Travis and Johnny and Rock. We were kind of regular sitting next to each other down there on a Saturday night for many years, as I say, before we got in the game. So I'll tip my cap to them for introducing us. But it was fun. Again, when I get in here and talk to people like that, for people I've known for years and years, and now in the game, it's a lot of fun, but even more fun when they're in the winner's circle.
Well, that's fantastic. And I was talking with my girlfriend last night about how long I'd known you, and it goes all the way back to the WSPN days.
That's right. The radio station out at Skidmore. Yeah,
Where we were doing news and actually cutting our teeth in this whole business.
Yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah, very good. Boy, there's a flashback.
Yeah.
Tim, appreciate it, and good luck going forward.
Thank you. Always success.
Tim McCoy from Blue Streak Racing. Again, visit the website. You can learn more about it. But we'll be rooting for Rosa Veloce and the stakes coming up as well. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined via Zoom. Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst for Equibase. We'll hit on stake up here at Saratoga and also take a look at the Del Mar card tomorrow. Some of the stakes, including the Pacific Classic. Stay tuned. No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
I got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by the National Racing Analyst for Equibase, Ellis Starr. And we'll talk a little bit about the Pacific Classic because I certainly wanted to get some of that conversation into today's show so folks will be aware. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, everybody.
Looking forward to a nice weekend. We'll also talk a little four-star Dave for the racing up here at Saratoga as well. But before we get into that, let's go back a couple of weeks. And last week, I'd like your opinions on some of the racing up here. We saw some nice three-year-olds 2 weeks ago on the male side, last week on the female side. Congratulations to you. You sat in with us and talked a little Travers talk, and you were taking a stab against Uncle Chuck, and you said, put a little Caracaro underneath Tis the Law in your Exacta. So a nice call there. But what were your thoughts on that performance in the Travers?
Well, first of all, getting the second horse to a odds-on favorite is almost like winning a race, in my opinion, when it's not the second favorite. I was pleased. But Tis the Law, just, you know, the way he just waltzed home the last three-eighths of a mile, eighth of a mile, quarter of a mile, whatever you want to say. It just was amazing. And, you know, he's just coming into the Derby so tough. I know we're going to get a full field, including some horses that are, you know, 0 points, like Cheryl Spike, with nothing against. But it's going to be quite interesting to have this horse coming into the race off such an easy win with so much gas left in the tank.
And what was your thought last week on Swiss Skydiver? I've been saying for the last few days, we just don't get this enough in horse racing. 2 weeks ago, or three, a couple of weeks ago, Gamine looks good, and probably leapfrogged Swiss Skydiver as the leader in the division. Then Swiss Skydiver comes back last weekend and moves herself, I don't know that she leapfrogged Gamine, but put herself right there with Gamine, and now they both come back 3 weeks later in the Kentucky Oaks. As I say, it just doesn't happen enough in horse racing.
Yeah, it's good. It is, and it's good that it's such a, you know, this opposite to the Derby. You know, Derby, you've got an outstanding leader in the division, and in the Oaks, you're going to have two horses that seem to have really extreme quality over the rest of the Oaks fillies, even though there's a lot of good ones. But it's going to be a battle, so it's really nice to have that juxtaposition of those two races. And I'm really looking forward to the Oaks in terms of that. But I'm also looking forward to see the display of Tis the Law in the Derby.
Yeah, I think Friday and Saturday are shaping up very nicely for racing fans as far as the marquee players and how it might play out. All right, speaking of marquee players, tomorrow here at Saratoga will be the four-star Dave. We'll get some thoughts on that one. I pulled up the Breeders' Cup Mile from last November. We're going to watch number 11, Uni, getting it done. That one, Uni laid off from that race until the Just a Game in June at Belmont and ran third on the comeback as even money. I have to think with that one under the belt, Uni is going to be tough tomorrow. But you have Raging Bull, the other Chad. Casa Creed from Belmont and our friend Lee Einsiedler is a horse that has always intrigued me. Maybe up against it a little bit tomorrow, but I find it interesting. Without Parole, Chewing Gum can be players. And I'm really intrigued to see what Got Stormy does. The last couple have been disappointing. I thought the Kilroe earlier this year, she was back on track. It hasn't proven to be the case. And Mark Cassie, a little cool at the meet. But Got Stormy had the really good performance in this race here last year. So, again, I'm really interested to see what she does tomorrow. What are your thoughts on the four-star, Dave?
Well, as far as Got Stormy, you know, she's had such a great career. But her last two are really questionable. I don't know what's gotten into her last year at this time of year. Just to look at Equibase speed figures, she's running 117, 115, and now it's 96, 95. Yeah. I can't use her. That's one of the few races I forgot to look at the morning line before I went on the air, but I think I'm going chalky here. I think Uni and Raging Bull stand out, and I think Uni stands out more than Raging Bull. She had the prep off, the layoff, the Just a Game at a mile. She's a true miler. There's no, you know, a lot of cliches I use, Seth, sometimes, and grade one winners win grade one races. And grade one milers win grade one miles. And Uni with that 7-for-9 record at a mile, it's just phenomenal. All those grade ones, I mean, the Breeders' Cup. I don't know why she didn't win last year. Now I'm looking at it, I didn't watch the race. I know she had a little traffic issue, but it's the same pattern, second off the layoff from the previous year. She had won the Perfect Sting last year. I assume she needed her last race. That's all I can say. And I have no problem with her running against the males here. I think she stands out. It's a tough race to make money in because, you know, I know she's going to be the favorite. I'm pretty sure. You could tell me the morning line is. Raging Bull ran okay in the Maker's Mark. I watched it. He really didn't have an excuse. What's interesting about Raging Bull is he's very consistent, which in this case is not a great thing. In other words, I looked at his Equibase speed figures going back to the four-star day last year, in which he ran second, of course, 116, then 114, 114, 114. I think that's his peak. And when I look at Uni's races, 115, 120, and 121, and I'm just using the speed figure, as you know, as kind of a comparison. Sure. That horse A ran its best race, and horse B ran its best race, which could win. Rachel Bull doesn't beat her. But it's Chad Brown, Rosario. I don't know if he gets the youth pace he wants. I made Uni even money on my blog on one of the websites I write for, which you can see when you if you follow me on Twitter. I think even money I'd take her, and I'll bet her over Raging Bull, Emmaus, and Without Parole. That's who I'm using in second and third in trifecta.
Sounds good. Let's shift our attention now to the West Coast and Del Mar. Again, I wanted to have a little conversation about the Pacific Classic. We'll have that card available tomorrow here at Capital OTB. So I wanted to just get people thinking in that direction a little bit. Obviously, the return of Maximum Security last time was a win. The return since the Saudi Cup, the move into the new barn, the Baffert Barn and whatnot. I wasn't super convinced by that. So I'm going to be really intrigued to see what he does tomorrow. But normally when I'm looking for replays, I'm just looking for some contenders to give people a little look at a horse to maybe think about. But I will admit, this one is your feature race of the week, the Pacific Classic at Equibase. So I took a little head start, and I pulled up the Eddie Reed from July 26th, because you're going in a very interesting direction here. The winner here will be number 7, United, but keep your eyes on number 3, Sharp Samurai, running second on the grass here. Now comes off the grass and heads to the Pacific Classic, and as I say, I took a little sneak peek at your analysis over at Equibase. That's why I pulled up this replay. And again, Sharp Samurai will be the number 3 in here coming up the rail. Winds up a very close-up second in the Eddie Reed on the grass. So give us your analysis of the Pacific Classic.
Well, this one I did look. I see he's 8-1 on the morning line, and I think John White did it because people are going to wonder whether he can transfer his form to dirt and whether he can get 10 furlong. And I'm not going to knock Maximum Security except for, you know, maybe 1-5. But his performance off the trainer change, off the layoff after coming back from Saudi Arabia was good, but he did have to battle the entire length of the stretch. In a 5-horse field, midcourt gave him a tussle. And at the 107 Equibase figure, nowhere near last year's Cigar Mile 123, Pascal 109, 111 in the Bold Ruler, 110 in the Derby, very consistent. He should improve second off the layoff. But Sharp Samurai was interesting. And now at 8-1, he's very interesting because, first of all, he ran his first few races on dirt, including his maiden win of the mile, which is a 9-length win way back in 17. And then all these great turf races. And I look at the first Samurai, who is the son of Giant's Causeway, I think of turf. But I went and did a research query real quick with 9 to 11 furlong winners for sons and daughters of First Samurai. He's 8-39, so he can get a winner. And there's no question, I think, of the horse's stamina. It's a question of where Juan Hernandez, who's having a great lead from shifting attack from Golden Gate, puts the horse in the race. And his last race figure from the Reed was 118. His City of Hope Mile figure from October 2018, Sharp Samurai, was 122. He's just fast, and that's what speed figures do. No matter the word you use, I don't care, buyer, wrist, anything you want, it's going to normalize for different surfaces. And so in that case, he's as fast as Maximum Security. I think you can beat him. I'll take 8-1. I'm not going to say Maximum Security can't win. Higher Power can win if he can run back to last year's Pacific Classic, but he's 5-2, so he's not a good bet at that price. So I like Sharp Samurai as a win bet. It's probably straight up for me, Seth. There's nothing else I'm going to do in this race, except for in multiple races, I'll use the 3 of them.
I like it. Taking a little shot with Sharp Samurai in the Pacific Classic. All right, again, it's a nice stakes card tomorrow, so we'll kind of work our way backwards, and there is a pick 5 that'll kick off in race number 7, and so we'll kind of work our way back to that 7th race, which is the Del Mar Handicap. But going backwards, race number 9 tomorrow is going to be the Del Mar Oaks Grade 1 event. I pulled up a replay going back to July 25th. We're going to look at the San Clemente out at Del Mar. It will be number three, Laura's Light, getting it done. Guiti, if I'm getting that close, runs second in here. That one comes back as well. But Laura's Light riding a two-race win streak and the win in the San Clemente, probably going to take some the action in here. I thought Aqua Sea Form Shame was interesting. Lightly raced and a couple of turf sprint wins coming into this. Miss Extra in the Richard Mandela Barn off a career over in Europe, I thought was also a little bit intriguing. What are your thoughts on the Del Mar Oaks?
It is an intriguing race. You know, Laura's Light, deserving favorite, probably based on her body work in California. But the two Europeans really intrigued me, Miss Extra and Neige Blanche. And then when I look at Neige Blanche, I see she's trained by Leonard Powell, the same as Guiti. I think that's how you say it, by the way.
I'll go with whatever you say. I was taking a total guess.
It's a guess. I think I've heard them call it before. So Guiti and Larry Comos will do a fantastic job, of course. And Guiti is the other horse. So I'm going using four here in all the multiples in pick threes from the 7th, the 9th, 8th, the 10th. But I like Miss Extra the most because this little filly, she ran 9th in the Prix de Diane Longines, which is the French Oaks. It is arguably the most important three-year-old filly race in all of Europe. And she was 20-1, which you think is a high odds, but it's really not. I mean, you have higher odds than that. She had won a Group 2 before that, which is the equivalent of a U.S. Group 1, in my opinion, in the Prix de Sandringham, and she rallied strongly. And I think there's a boatload of pace here. Aqua Sea Form Shame, as you said, you mentioned her, but she's stretching out. I don't think she's going to be rated. I think she's going to go, or she'll be close coming out of that 22-45 she ran last time out. Parkour is a horse that just runs off. And, I mean, I like her. She's a really nice horse. Ellen J. Foxwood's having a fantastic year again, but just a lot of early speed. And I think she's just going to be too strong to not want the lead. And then the six horse trickle in as a need to lead type. And that really, I think we're going to see 47 and change, maybe a little faster than that. Miss Extra, first of all, leading jockey in Berger was fully gets on. She's in the Mandela Barn. If she runs back to the Prix de Sandringham, which is an equivalent 112 equal-based speed figure, she looks really tough. Then you've got the uncoupled entry I mentioned of Neige Blanche and Guiti. Neige Blanche won a Group 3, which is the equivalent of Group 2. She won a race at a lesser track than Miss Extra did. That was Miss Extra won at Chantilly. Neige Blanche won at Lyon Parilly, if I'm saying that right. But she won. She gets Lasix. She gets Pratt, the second-leading jockey. So that's a tough entry. And then Guiti was coming. And with a little better pace, she'd get up at Laura's Light. So my bet's going to be a Miss Extra is a win bet, and I'm probably going to exact and trifecta box the four horses. And I'd love this race. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how these Europeans perform in their U.S. debuts off of their French form.
Very good. Let's move backwards again in a late pick five sequence. It includes an optional claimer, non-winners, and two other that could be a stakes race if you look at the PPs here for the eight horses, but you said you had an opinion on this one as well. What do you see in this eighth optional claimer going a mile on the main track?
Yes, and don't forget, I want to remind everybody I'm doing a live, BC Live tomorrow for Breeders' Cup with America's Best Racing and Dan Chordman from 7:45 till just after the Classic. There's like four websites, two Breeders' Cup, Facebook, YouTube, America's Best Racing. So you can find that on all our Twitter feeds. And just go to breederscup.com and you can watch, you can get the link. So I'm hoping everybody can join us tomorrow night.
So that's tomorrow kind of during the card?
Sorry?
That's tomorrow kind of during the card?
Yes, we're doing it live from 7:45 to 9:45 nice. Eastern. We're going to cover these four races, 7, 8, 9, 10,
excellent,
at Del Mar on Breeders' Cup Live.
Excellent. Your thoughts on the eighth?
So take the 101 looks like lone speed here, the opposite of the race you just talked about. It's non-winners of two allowance. He wired the field in May off a two-month layoff from March at the one lower non-winners of one allowance level, wire to wire with Valdivia. They got a little cheeky and they put him in a couple of cowbred stakes. He showed speed and tired in both, almost on the grass. He's back at his game now. Mile on the Dirt Allowance Company. There's no speed inside in the gate. He's the one to catch. Potantico was beaten a half length under identical conditions last last month at Del Mar. Those two stand out. I'm going to take a little on some tickets. I'm going to use the one on Broken Star, who had a big win one before last, and the six Extra Hope, who ran second at Midcourt, who's running in the Classic. But that was last November, so it's a long time to come back and run two turns on dirt off a layoff with this kind of horse. But 4-3 are my main picks. Take the 101 on Botanico, and then 1-6 I'll use on a couple of doubles and pick three.
Very good. Let's go back to one more stakes race that'll kick off that late pick five. It'll start in race number 7. It's the Del Mar Handicap, a mile and 3/8, a field of 11 scheduled in here. United, obviously, off the last few wins, will take the action. But Combatant is a horse I've liked throughout the career. Gets back to the turf. I might play around a little bit with that one. It never kind of lived up to that for me, but one of those that at a price, I may play around a little bit with that one. But as I say, it looks like a United. Red King is maybe interesting also, coming off some wins, including the San Juan Capistrano. But what are your thoughts on the Del Mar Handicap?
Well, it's a really interesting race, as you said. You can make the case for a Combatant if you can throw out the last two. Personally, I can't. I have that little thing I like to say, well, you can't get there from here. You can't get here from there, is what you want to say it. You know, this 10th beating 11, 5th beating 10, it's tough. It's certainly not impossible based on that. United is very tough. I think that this is like the Travers. How do you make money with a prohibitive favorite in a race like this? And it's interesting because Oscar Dominguez has faced United 3 times. He's come away with 1 win. United's beaten him twice. I think the interesting horse, the horse I'm going to use, I'll give out the basic ticket first. I'm going to play United over Warden Jerry, who has been close in a couple of these races, 3rd in the San Juan Capistrano. He won the San Luis Rey, 3rd in a 3-horse blanket finish in the Turf Cup. Then he used 1 over the 5, the 7, Red King, who won the San Juan Capistrano this year, the 9, Oscar Dominguez, and the 10, Originaire, who has finished 3rd and 5th United. That's my B ticket. My A ticket is going to be a wacky one. I think this horse, number 2, another mystery, can get 2nd or 3rd, and I think he's 20-1. And I'm going to play a trifecta, and I'll get back to the case why, but we'll give the ticket. United over 2, another mystery over all, and 1 over all over 2. And what's interesting about this horse is they're shipping this horse in from the East Coast into Mike McCarthy's barn, who's having a great meet. And this horse has some breeding. Now, I don't know if you follow Illinois racing much over the years, but there was a horse by this mare, Iowa 2, who's owned by Team Block. And I did look her record. She did well, though. Iowa Big Time, who won $540,000. He won the American St. Leger at a mile 11/16. The first time he went long a marathon distance on the grass, he won the Stars and Stripes at Arlington back in 2012. And a bunch of races, won the Kentucky Turf Cup as well. This one, and Temple City also is really good. It's a lot of 11 to 16 furlong winners on the grass. He's 7-29 with his, this is a stayer. And the last few races are kind of lousy, but you look back, 6 in the Connolly was up close. He won a mile and an 1/8. His mile and a half race, the Bald Eagle Derby, he was 3rd place, 2nd, even though he wasn't interfered with at Laurel last. Anyway, I just think this is Victor Espinosa gets on, top barn, tremendous breeding for a mile and 3/8 or longer. And I'm just hoping this horse sneaks in. So that's the way to play it, because I can't bet United to win at 3-5.
I like it. Some good ideas on the stakes card tomorrow at Del Mar, highlighted by the Pacific Classic. Again, the Pacific Classic is the feature race from Ellis on Equibase. You can go there and find the complete write-up. And again, Ellis, remind us, people go over to America's Best Racing. I assume they will find the link, but tout the event again tomorrow.
Yeah, it's BC Live, and myself, Dan Jordan, Bram Weinstein, bunch of guests. I was just reading the list. Michelle Yu, a bunch of people joining us. We're on from 7:45 Eastern to 9:45. We'll be actually showing the replays, I believe, at Del Mar from the 7th to 10th. And you can go to the ABR Twitter, my Twitter, Breeders' Cup Facebook, Breeders' Cup YouTube, America's Best Racing Facebook, and America's Best YouTube. So we're hoping to have lots of people joining us, watching us, covering these 4 fantastic races, including the 3 stakes, at Del Mar tomorrow night.
I like it. It sounds like a good post-Saratoga activity tomorrow night for our fans up here. Go home, fire up the computer, and watch Ellis and Company take you through the Del Mar later portion of the card. Ellis, as always, we really appreciate the visit and the thoughts, and of course, we will talk again.
My pleasure, everybody. Have a great day this weekend. Great weekend this weekend.
Appreciate it. Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst from Equibase. We'll take a break, and as we come back, as promised earlier, again, Gary Contessa has been jumping in to do some interviews with us. The upcoming interview with our friend Andy Serling. So you want to stay tuned for that. That's right after the break. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome.
Seth, you do a great job too, so thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
Gary Contessa with Capital OTB, sitting across from the one and only Andy Serling. Today we're going to take a look into his life before NYRA and get some real insight from Andy on what life is like here at NYRA in his position. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Andy Serling, who is more or less the face of New York racing, and we get to see him every day. We get to hear his commentary on the horses, and I've been looking forward to this all week, Andy. Thank you for coming.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Andy, I want our viewers to see a different side of the participants of racing. So I'd like to take you back to, let's go back to high school. Tell me about Andy Serling, what your first time with racing is, where you are, what is your mindset in high school, to college, how you finally made it to NYRA, because you do a great job of what you do, and I'd like to hear about how you got there.
Well, I mean, my story is almost sort of corny because, you know, when my family moved here, right after, I think on Labor Day weekend, we moved here in 1973, so the track was obviously closed, and my dad loved the track, and he used to go to Liberty Bell in Monmouth because we lived in New Jersey, and I was 11 at the time, and I went to Liberty Bell once when they had thoroughbreds. That's how long ago it was. And I think it's the track, Nick Zito won his first race at Liberty Bell, I want to say. Became a harness track. I used to go when I was in college. Anyway, we'd go to the harness track occasionally that first year. I really had no interest. My brother, believe it or not, was much more into it than I was. And when this track opened, my father was working at Empire State College in town, which is down the street. And he loved coming over, and obviously couldn't come a lot during the week, but he would like to come up for the last 2-3 weeks, races he'd go, because he loved betting triples. And back then, as I'm sure you remember, the trifecta was in the last race, the only race, and there were only 9 that back then also. And so I went over with him. I mean, it was a short walk from where he lived, and I figured, why not just come over? And I literally walked into this place and looked around and went, oh my God, I cannot believe that something like this is in our backyard, you know? It really is like the Yankees moved to your hometown, you know, your small hometown. I had no idea that this was actually going on a few blocks from where I lived. So I looked around, this is kind of exciting and fun. There's people and the horses were cool, and I looked at them and it was kind of fun, and the numbers, and I'm a numbers guy, so that appealed to me. And then as the summer wore on, I would go more often with my father, and by the last week of the meet, I started going every day, the entire day, where I saw Ruffian run. And I had read about Ruffy in the paper, so I stood down on the rail and saw her win the spin away, and I was hooked. You know, I went over, I was betting the show, and I didn't know anything about handicapping, you know, Angel Cordero, I saw the jockeys, and Lafitte Pincai was riding here at the time, and Baeza, and all these great riders, and I just that was it for me. I'm an obsessive personality. I was the same as a kid as I am now. I was probably more obnoxious as a kid I am now, if you could possibly imagine. And I just got obsessed by it. You know, I was, whatever I did, I was obsessed by it. And as the year went on, I started cutting the charts out of the New York Times, because back then they had a full chart in there, and my parents always got the Times. So I have chart books at home with the races from back in those days. I have in my apartment in New York, as a matter of fact. And Andy Beyer's book, Picking Winners, came out as if, you know, a fortuitous moment in my life, the spring of the following year. And my father bought it for me. He was reviewing the New York Times. My father bought it for me, and here's this guy who writes really well, who went to Harvard, and he's really smart, and he's telling people, you can win at the races. And I thought, I knew you could win at the races. I knew I could spend my life hanging around the racetrack with the horses, and it looks like fun. And so now it was just all over for me, because I had this proof from this guy who went to Harvard, and he has a respectable job, little did I know. And Andy, of course, still a good friend of mine. He was Andy, and that was really it. It never really changed for me. I just loved horse racing. I was obsessed by it. I'm as obsessed by it now as I was back then.
So tell us about your college education. Did you go to college?
In theory, I did. And you know, that's, I always joke about it. My mother still gets mad at me when I joke about this, because my freshman year, 1980, it's the only Travers I've missed since holding pattern one in 74. College, you know, the pre-college, the stuff, what is it, you know, when you go your first year, orientation. It was a week and a half before the meet was over, the four-week meet back then. And I had to go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I went to Lehigh. And Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I had to go from here to there, and I was not happy about it. And so right away, I was miserable going there. But I had a fun time in college. And the great thing about Lehigh was that it was centrally located to pretty much every Grateful Dead concert on the East Coast. So that made it very easy to attend a lot of Grateful Dead concerts. And I could get to New York if I wanted to go to the track, and occasionally took the bus in and went to Aqueduct in the winter, or my roommate and I would drive and we'd go to like Philly Park, or we'd go to even to Aqueduct or Belmont occasionally. So I stayed involved in racing. In fact, there was a newsstand right around the corner from me when I lived in Bethlehem, was down the hill my freshman year, but all around the corner from me as a sophomore, that had the advanced form. And back then, as you know, the advanced form was sold at the track, but we couldn't even buy it in newsstands in Manhattan. So I was getting the racing form the next day earlier in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So a lot of Saturdays I would buy it and stay close to the racing. But I probably, that was one time in my life I followed the racing a little bit less than I have the rest of my life.
So you're becoming a good handicapper. You're friends with Andy Beyer. Tell us about the transition from hanging at the racetrack and loving the racetrack to working for NYRA in the capacity that you do today.
I'm an outgoing guy, so I met a lot of people. I mean, coming up here, I knew a lot of players that played full-time and things. Even as a kid, I used to annoy them. And I met Harvey Pack in 1976, I want to say. And as you may remember, Harvey back then used to have guests on between races on Saturdays and big days. So when I'd go down to Belmont, you know, I was down there sporadically, go there with my grandmother a lot. He's a kid. I'd even come on as a special guest handicapper, as the kid handicapper. So that was my first exposure to that. And when I started playing full-time, I played full-time 94, 95, 96, and 97. I took a break. I was trading options down in New York, and I took a break, and I ended up going back for 10 years in 97, after 97. And Steve Crist was working at NYRA. And in the end of 95, I would go to Florida in the winters. In fact, Andy and I roomed together one of those winters. And at the end of 95, before I went to Florida in December, Steve Crist and I become good friends, and they had Talking Horses back then. It just started, and I think it was Rich McCarthy, Wolfie, and Mike Watchmaker. And each of them was going to take a two-week vacation, so Steve asked me if I'd like to fill in and do 4 weeks of it. And I said, sure. And I had a good time. It was fun. You know, it was very loose, and I felt comfortable in front of the camera, so I did that. And then when I came back from Florida in the spring, things changed a bit on the show, and they ended up asking me to come on and do Talking Horses full time. And I do it every day. I did it with Mike Watchmaker for a year. We had a great time. I did it from, I want to say, late May maybe until sometime in March the next year, 96, 97. I filled in also doing the Prattles a little bit. Also, John and Brielle mostly did them, but I filled in, you know, guest time when Johnny was calling right. The races in different times and did that. And I enjoyed doing it, and Mike and I had a fun time on the show, and it was popular. And then NYRA Management decided to give me the boot. For no reason whatsoever. I think Terry Meeks was in charge at that time. And so it was fine because I really wasn't making much money playing the horse at that time, and I wanted to go back to trading options. It was a good time for that. So I went back to the floor and I traded until 2007. In the meantime, I was always coming up here in the summers, and as time went on, more and more and staying the whole meet, and Steve Crist and Charlie Hayward bought the Daily Racing Form. And they had the seminars at Ciro's. And they brought in Harvey as the host, and I became a guest on that. And that started around 99, 2000. And as a couple years wore on, I pretty much was on every day. And it would be Steve would be on Crist and different guest handicappers and different fun people. And we were over at Ciro's, and it was a blast. And the first few years, it was really great because it was just the people coming over to Ciro's, so I could be as ridiculous as I possibly wanted to be. Then they started showing up at Capital OTB. Then New York City OTB realized they were good. Capital was ahead of the curve on that. And they started showing them. So we had to behave a little bit better. Maybe a little less smoking on stage. You know, I was smoking back then and, you know, a little less misbehaving. But it was still a lot of fun. And I was trading options, and it got very hard to make money. And that business changed a lot. And as a friend of mine who's still in the business said to me, you were ahead of the curve in leaving there. But I left because I lost a few dollars, and I just wasn't making any money. And I lost a few dollars in a stock called New Century, which anyone that's seen The Big Short will know it's the first company they showed that went bankrupt, as though the mortgage companies were right now. Fortunately for the people who backed me, it only went from 30 to 22.
The housing market is rock solid.
It's a time bomb. So Mike Burry, who gets his hair cut at Supercuts and doesn't wear shoes, knows more than Alan Greenspan.
Dr. Mike Burry, yes, he does.
You know what? I'm pissed off. American people are getting screwed by the big banks.
And I am getting madder and madder.
It's unbelievable.
Then this guy walks into my office and says,
there's some shady stuff going down.
I'm sure the world's banks have more incentives than greed. You're wrong.
If it had gotten, it was a dollar like 3 weeks right later, if it got to a dollar, it would have been really expensive. It was only moderately expensive. And I thought, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not making any money. I don't see any future in this. I love working at the racetrack. I love doing this stuff. It's time to like put up or shut up. Try to do it. If it doesn't work, find something else, but try to do it. And Charlie Hayward was president of NYRA. And Charlie and I were friends. I mean, we weren't close friends. We were very friendly. And I called him up and asked him, you know, if he wanted to talk about my coming to work there. And he said, sure. And we met at Cafe Luxembourg in my neighborhood, a place we still go to, and talked about it. And Charlie and I had a very similar vision how the racing would go. And Charlie gave me a very rare opportunity. I really had a vision on how the TV racing should be presented on simulcast TV. And I felt that tracks in this country were missing a great opportunity, where it's replays and trainer stats and fun. Have fun with it, you know, have an educated but fun time, because it is a hobby for most people. Make it entertaining, try to make it entertaining. And Charlie's gave me free rein to sort of do it, and I got the opportunity, because of Charlie, to do something I really wanted to do, and a rare opportunity to have a vision for something, try to put into place, and it seems to have worked reasonably well, so I'm grateful to Charlie for that opportunity.
It has worked well. And you can be a little bit ridiculous. And it's wonderful because it's very entertaining.
I've known Anthony a long time, and I love Anthony. He's truly one of my favorite people, and anyone that knows Anthony knows that he's a truly wonderful guy. But Anthony and I are also complete opposites. You know, we look at racing very differently, but that's good. Everybody doesn't need to hear my idiotic opinions and all my stuff. There are a lot of people that don't want to hear what I have to say, don't agree with the way I look at racing, which is great. I mean, that's racing. Racing is great because there's so many different ways to look at it and so many different opinions. And you bring Anthony and I are a yin and yang of opinions and handicapping, and we fight on there and we disagree and give each other a hard time, and I'm probably a lot tougher on him than he is on me. But we really have a lot of respect and like each other a lot, and I find him to be an incredibly engaging co-host, and I feel lucky to have him.
I've been told you will be venturing back to New York. Don't you think Phyllis deserves like 2 months off from you?
I think Phyllis is happy that I'm coming home.
There are
crab cakes waiting from the crabs. They went crab.
There's no chance they moved away with forwarding address.
They went crabbing in Ocean City, New Jersey, and they brought some crabs. They actually made some crab cakes. I'll have some pancakes tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing Mom and Pete and Phil, of course. Phil's waiting with cigar in hand for me.
That reminds me of you going home getting the crab cakes that your mom made when our friend Dan Silver used to work with us once. Just before Saratoga, he went clamming in Jamaica Bay. He was sick for the first 2 weeks of Saratoga. Shockingly, he was sick for the first 2 weeks of Saratoga. Yeah,
that is not a good idea.
Yeah, it was a good move by Dan, a very clever move by him. So make sure, you know, I don't want any problems.
And another thing you may or may not have gotten credit for, and I don't even know that you care to receive any credit, but when I had the opportunity and the pleasure to sit down with Maggie and Tom Morley, Maggie did not hesitate to say that you brought her here. And you mentored her in what she's doing, and you've created a very good Paddock personality, well received by the fans, and the fans and Maggie have you to thank for that. How do you feel about Maggie?
Well, I appreciate Maggie saying that, and I did hire her. You know, she came up with her. Steve Bick actually told me about her, and I watched her do the Colonial show. She used to do that with Stan, and I thought, oh, I got to work with her. But I knew there was something there. I could just tell there was. And there's something about Maggie. So she came up to New York and met with me, and because Jan Rushen had left and we were looking to replace her, and we weren't really quite ready to hire somebody. And I liked her. I don't know what it was. I just liked her, and I could tell. And she came and worked for us in the press office with Dan Silver. And Dan loved her. He said, she's incredibly hardworking. You know, she does everything. She's great. Dan just loved her. And I thought, that's good enough for me. And Charlie was ready to hire somebody. So we did. And, you know, talked to Maggie about, you know, the idea is not to tell somebody a horse looks good today. It's to tell him this horse looks better than he looked last time. And Maggie has the courage to go out and say, hey, this horse isn't looking that good. And as you know, a lot of people don't like it. You've been on the receiving end of that. But Maggie.
One time.
Yeah, Maggie's got the courage of her convictions. And I have unbelievable respect for her. And you know what? She's not always right. Sometimes she doesn't love the way a horse looks. Usually she is. But sometimes, and she's okay with it. But I appreciate her saying those things. But at the end of the day, if Maggie Wolfendale wasn't the person that she is and the kind of hard worker that she is and the dedication she is, I wouldn't have looked good. I only may look good in that situation because she's so darn good at her job. She's amazing. And Maggie is somebody, she shows up every day 100% prepared. Whether you agree with Maggie, whatever it is, Maggie's giving you her all. And that's, I think, the only thing you can ask for people with these jobs. I think there's too many people that don't take it as seriously as somebody like Maggie.
And you know, both ears help trainers inevitably. I'm sure Maggie has angered a few trainers. And she angered me the first time she said one of my horses looks skinny. And I went back and looked at that horse, and I'm, man, that horse looks good to me. But I see her making calls like that, and they're right. And she and I actually came to a meeting of the minds, and I realized, you know what? Trainers see horses every day, and we don't get to see the change in them because the change is very subtle over a 7, 10, 15-day period. And a guy like Andy Serling or a woman like Maggie might see that horse once every 15, 25, 30 days, and you see the difference, and the trainer doesn't.
It's like having a child. If a parent has a child with them all the time, they're not going to necessarily notice the huge difference in a year. You don't see the kid. You come back, and suddenly it's a completely different. Yeah, I that's a great point. Maggie's been exceptional. I mean, she is absolutely the gold standard in this industry for doing that job. Belmont, there was a 1-5 grand motion horse, a European recently, that looked like, how could it not beat this field? Maggie hated that horse. Maggie's been friends with Graham and Anita forever. But she hated that horse and went on and on in our show. Horse didn't lift a hoof at 1-5.
Wow.
That takes a certain amount of courage to not be afraid to make yourself look like a dummy.
You have to have the courage of your convictions when you're in a job like that.
And she does.
And it's incredible. And you know what? That takes us back to Castaneda. Gary Contessa would still be trying to make that horse a two-turn horse at age 20 if it wasn't for you reaching out to me about him sprinting. And you know what? You see Castaneda once a month. I see him every day. I watch him work 5/8 and then run off a mile after the wire. And I'm like, this horse wants to go a mile and a half. And you really helped me with that. And I really appreciate
it. Nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
Andy, I can't thank you enough giving us this insight to your life. And one other thing that you said, you used the word mother many times. And I know you're very close to your mother.
My mom's great.
And Maggie also said your mother was great. Yeah. And you know something? You're blessed. Well, you're blessed, and my thoughts and prayers with your mother all the time, because mothers are the best.
My mother loves Maggie because she likes making sweaters for babies. So every time Maggie's had a child, she couldn't wait to make a sweater for the baby.
She told us that.
My mom is great. Yeah.
And your mother, and the fact that you're so close to your mother is just a beautiful thing.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Andy, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I really appreciate the insight that you've given us into your life and all the things we got to talk about. And we really thank you for coming, and we appreciate the interview. Thank you, Andy.
The pleasure's been all mine, Gary. Thanks for asking me. I really enjoyed myself.
Well, that was fun, but Andy better watch out. He does too many interviews like that and ruin his reputation. People will realize he's a nice guy. I'm kidding. I've known Andy. I've been friends with Andy for a long time, so I've had the pleasure of
talking to him just in social situations. Most people just know him from the television, though. But so it was fun to get – Gary did a great job, get a little behind-the-scenes Andy and gave you a little more insight to the real Andy there. And it was good to hear his kind of his background and how he got – I remember probably a lot of people in the audience do, the old Harvey Pack Cirros days. It was good to kind of reminisce about that a little bit during the interview as well. That was fun. That was kind of before we had the morning programming, and that was the morning programming at Saratoga. They would have the Cirros seminar. Yeah, that was a throwback to another time, and it was good, as I say, to reminisce about that a little bit. But again, fun to see the Andy interview. Good job by Gary Contessa. And again, always throw a little props as well to our man Mick Richards, who goes out and shoots and edits those pieces. And when I do that, I always like to tout also Danny Dino and, of course, Brian in our trailer here, who do the yeoman's work day in and day out, putting the shows together and making me look good out here. I appreciate that as well. I'm going to wrap it up, but before I do, as always, I want to remind you of promos, because today is the bounty bet. So certainly want to alert you to that. There's $800 up for grabs. All you have to do, again, play the late pick five here at Saratoga with your Capital OTV bet account, and you're in line for all or part of that bounty if you can hit that late pick five this afternoon at Saratoga. Saratoga track bonus available as well to the top 50 highest wagering account holders. You get a little extra dough in your account. Tomorrow, as I said earlier, I would assume the syndicate is probably full this week. You can check the website to make sure of that. But if it is, Sunday, a new syndicate opens. And again, we've talked about it before. For $25, you get to join a group of other people and get in on a $750 late pick five ticket on a Saturday afternoon here at Saratoga. A couple of weeks ago, the syndicate hit for, I want to say, $4,500, $4,900 or something like that. Everybody walked away with a couple of $100. So a lot of fun. You get to put some input into how the ticket is constructed. So as I say, you can check the website to see if it's still open for this week. If it isn't, keep in mind the syndicate opens up for next week on Sunday afternoon. Speaking of Sunday, there's a double promo at the Clubhouse Racebook on Sunday if you want to make that your venue for watching the races Sunday afternoon. And Sunday also, if you're looking for a venue, Saratoga National Prime at Saratoga National, we will have another OTV Live bankroll. As I always say with Prime, though, they take reservations for seating, and more importantly, they've been sold out a number of days. So if you're thinking of coming up and watching Brian Addo with the bankroll on Sunday, just call ahead. Make sure there's some availabilities at Prime, but we'd love to see you there if you can get a seat. Make that part of the agenda for the weekend as well. Sunday, Prime at Saratoga National, the OTV Live bankroll with Brian Addo. Speaking of Brian, I believe he is on the road right now. At the Chad Brown Barn, taping an interview that will be plugged in tomorrow on Saturdays at the Spa. So you will not want to miss that. Back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with the Handicapper Support, and then at 10 a.m. for Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Addo. And again, Chad with some nice runners in the four-star Dave tomorrow. Certainly they will talk about that and much, much more. So put that on your agenda. I'll be back in Sunday morning, Handicapper Support, and loose on the lead. Steve Bick and I on Sunday. Steve's last Saratoga appearance. Then he's heading down to Churchill for Derby and Derby Week. We'll check in certainly with Steve the following couple of weeks, but it'll be his last appearance here on the set with me, so make sure you tune in for that on Sunday morning. But as usual, I'm running over. I'm looking at my clock. I'm running over, so I will wrap it up for this Friday morning, a gorgeous Friday morning that will turn into a gorgeous Friday afternoon with a lot of great action here at Saratoga and beyond. Don't forget, nighttime thoroughbred racing available as well. We're following all of that with Del Mar. And we talked earlier about Pacific Classic tomorrow. Keep that on the agenda for tomorrow evening, but also nighttime racing available here on the network on this Friday as well. All right. Thanks again to Gary Contessa and Andy Serling for the taped interview. Ella Starr from Equibase for joining us to talk a little handicapping. And Tim McCoy, my friend Tim McCoy, Blue Streak Racing, a locally based partnership, had the nice first out winner earlier in the meet, and aiming for a stakes race a little bit later on as well. So good luck to them, and appreciate all of the guests this morning. Wrapping it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Enjoy the racing this afternoon. See you right back here tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for the Handicapper Support.
Watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit LeahCars.com. Leah Cars for life. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.